So you were, let's bring in Nick Whalen. Nick Whalen, co-host of Prop Points, which follows us each and every day here on the network at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. Jeff Erickson, our buddy, and Nick Whalen do Prop Points every day. Nick joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at Whalen. Just substitute the L, just substitute the number one for the L. Still workshopping that, Nick? Is that still a work in progress?
Still a work in progress, still, you know, openly crowdsourcing this. Usually after I come on with you guys, I get, you know, one or two tweets, people still telling me how terrible the Twitter handle is. So as always, I am open for ideas. You know, you can go on Twitter, you can see what's available. If you think there's something better out there, please, I'm begging you, let me know.
Your Twitter handle is great.
Yeah, I really didn't know this was such a thing until Matt Brown filled in of once course. And wouldn't shut up about it.
Bullied you.
He's kind of driving the bus on that. Yeah.
Okay. Kelly, my buddy Kelly Bidlin right here, off air suggested, he says, you know, because we were talking about Wembanyama and the shove on Brunson. We do like this fact that Wembanyama seems to have this mean streak about him.
It's a little dirty. Yeah. I like it.
And I don't know, is tonight retribution game four? You see getting ugly tonight?
I would love that to be the case from an independent fan perspective, but I think New York is a little bit too smart to come out and try to target Victor Wembanyama. You know, I know there are theories out there that, you know, the NBA doesn't want him to accrue a certain number of flagrant points that could potentially lead to a suspension, whether it would have been a flagrant two that would have triggered that the other night, or even just putting him on the verge of, you know, something else happening throughout the series and risking him missing a game. But now, I think the Knicks are a team of mostly mature guys, right? It's like Brunson didn't even really retaliate after he was shoved to the ground. And we've had a little bit of pushing and shoving. I think it was in game two when Luke Kornet, you know, kind of trampled Josh Hart under the basket. But no, I think if anything, the Knicks just need to respond with equally physical play. And I think the Knicks will likely get in the ears of the officials, as we tend to see between games in these series. Mike Brown, of course, you know, did
already
his diatribe
after
game three. Yeah, and that I think that actually works maybe a little bit more than we think. You know, it comes off as just a coach complaining, but you got to get it out there, right? And, you know, I do think the Knicks got away with plenty of fouls as well. I'm thinking of one specifically. I think it was late in the second quarter where Stephon Castle got to the rim. It was right before a commercial and they showed it again. And you could see OG Anunoby kind of rakes him across the wrist. He gets hit again on his way to the basket. So I don't think the Knicks have gotten a plus whistle in this series by any means, but I think as the game went along the other night, it did even out a little bit more. But obviously, you know, the Wembanyama shove is going to be the lightning rod play.
I had a Knicks fan friend talking about how they got hosed in game three. And I didn't lose it on it, but I was just like, dude, I literally can Google.
They missed 12 threes in a row.
I can literally, you win 13 games in a row, you're spectacular. Then one goes against you and it's like, oh my God, the refs costed. And by the way, you can Google almost any game in the playoffs. NBA referees made three mistakes and Knicks win over Cavs. You know, game three against the Hawks, free throw discrepancy in favor of the Knicks. I don't hear Knicks fans bitching about those outcomes, right? So it happens. I think you're right about the whole, you know, get ahead of it with coaches, though. I do think, you know, as officials are human beings, that kind of complaint seeps into their head. It can't possibly not. And so maybe the whistle is more favorable for the Knicks tonight. Let's start with the side and the total. You are still alive for second place in the Killer Sports VSiN Challenge, Nick Whalen, last I looked. What are your thoughts on both the side and total? Do you have bets or do you just have leans on these two?
Yeah, more so leans. I mean, side especially has been difficult for me in this series. I do think, and I will have a play in the contest. I sat out game three, but we're going to jump back in tonight. I think I will take the New York Knicks, and I do lean toward the under. You know, the pace in this series has actually been quite a bit faster than I would have expected. It's faster than both of these teams have been playing so far in the postseason, but we're not necessarily seeing that lead to a ton of transition points. You know, the Spurs in particular were able to get out and run a bit in games one and two. That was not the case at all in game three, despite that pace number sitting about where it has for this series. And that's also with the Knicks committing as many just careless, ridiculous third grade level turnovers as I can remember in any finals game. I mean, the amount of just thrown away possessions that the Knicks had, this is another thing, Gil, if you want to blame the referees, how about the 9 or 10 possessions that the Knicks just literally threw away throughout this game? The first two possessions in the first quarter, the first two possessions out of halftime were just miscommunications, throwing the ball into the crowd. So I do think the Knicks probably cut down on the turnovers. Yes, that leads to more scoring opportunities in the half court, but you know, series like this, when you have two really good defensive teams, you continue to make adjustments. The defense tends to get better and better as the series goes along. So I think we get another grind of a game, probably another close game. And I do think the New York Knicks could get a win here. I think they should have won game three. Again, if they don't start the fourth quarter, guys, going 0 of 12 from beyond the arc, their only two makes were those desperation threes by Ananobi and Brunson in the final minute. I think we're probably talking about a 3-0 lead.
Yeah, we also could be talking about a Spurs 2-1 lead, right? Like the Spurs had about 75 chances to blow that game open in game three, too, and they couldn't do it, right? So that's, and again, the Spurs have had double-digit leads in every single one of these games. We'll see if they can do it in game four as well. Okay, so how about the bets you're actually making, prop bets?
Yeah, let's see what we got on the card here for tonight, guys. We are going to go back to the well on something I've played each of the last two games. It's hit in each of the last two games. We're still getting a really good price on Victor Wembanyama over 1.5 steals. Now, this is down a little bit, plus 168 at DraftKings. We got it at plus 178 on Monday night, but you can still get this at plus 190 over at Bet Rivers. So shop around, find the best price. He's hit this in each of the last two games. It's hit in 5 of the last 7, dating back to the West Finals. He has at least one steal now in 10 straight. He's leading the finals in deflections per game, which is fairly predictive as far as how many steals you're going to come up with. Again, I expect the Knicks to make a point to not turn it over as much as they did last game. Easier said than done against the Spurs defense. So we'll keep riding that one at a nice plus money price. You know, I'm looking at the assists for De'Aaron Fox. I think that's going to be a really popular prop tonight. If you want value here, you basically have to take the over 6.5. I don't know if I could quite get there. I think it's an interesting one to discuss whether you'd rather play him or Castle. You know, Fox has the higher percentage of passes that have resulted in an assist in this series. He's had more assist chances than Castle, but the Spurs continue to just not convert the potential assist for Stephon Castle at nearly the rate you would expect. So I think at some point that does come around, but probably will end up on the over 6.5 for De'Aaron Fox. And then I like the over 2.5 threes for Devin Vassell at plus 118. You know, the Spurs went away from Stephon Castle down the stretch in game two. They went away from Julian Champagne down the stretch in game three. Mitch Johnson has a ton of trust in Devin Vassell. They love his shooting. They love his versatility on defense. He's hit 3 threes in each of the last two games. Did only have 4 attempts in game three, which is a little concerning, but he's taken at least 6 guys in 13 of the last 16 games, dating all the way back to the start of the Minnesota series.
Landry Shamet over 1.5 threes as well?
I think so. I think we got to grab the discount on this. I mean, Shamet was brutal. He was another one of the reasons that the Knicks did not win that game the other night. I think he was a minus 20 when he was on the court. He was bad on defense. He committed some terrible fouls. The one non-3-pointer that he took was just like a comical layup where he got blocked at the rim by Wembanyama, but he still got 7 3-pointers up, and most of those were pretty good looks. You know, we know he was, 21 of 31, I think, over his last 7 games heading into game one. So when he's out there for a reason. It's to get threes up. And, you know, this over 1.5 threes for Shamet, that was like around minus 150, minus 155 for game two, or excuse me, for game three. It's now minus 118 at FanDuel. So I will grab that at a much more reasonable price. If you want to look at the alt market, take the over 2.5. Maybe you do that, but over 1.5 to me, it feels like a good deal.
All right. Wembanyama over 1.5 steals, Vassell over 2.5 threes, and Shamet over 1.5 threes for the Knicks. You lean Knicks. You might pick them in the contest. Did I step on your lean on the total? Which way do you lean the total?
I lean under. I think the defense wins out again.
Okay. Nick, we look forward to prop points today at Whalen. Just substitute the L with the number 1. Thank you, Nick. Appreciate it.
Anytime, guys.
Nick Whalen, everybody. Prop points, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Visa Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with Visa Pro.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number 2 of a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, SiriusXM channel 158. So many ways to take us in. You just have to choose one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And we appreciate that you have. That's it. I'm just grateful. Thank you all for hanging out with us each and every morning. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, still to come, Will Hill will join us, Todd Whalen. Dallin Cuff, pardon me, on the World Cup. Dallin was doing golf yesterday.
Dallin was, yes, on the longest day of golf for the U.S. Open qualifiers around the country.
Qualies.
I don't even know where he was at. I got a picture sent to me from Matt Brown.
Okay.
Like, oh, Dallin out there. Okay.
He has, find out. And we're told he has a bajillion World Cup bets.
I love it.
Yeah.
My list of things to do today, Gil, is pretty sad, but there is. I made sure to carve out time to narrow down and finalize the World Cup futures.
Yeah, I got to make some bets, too.
Which I already know, like I'm excited to do, but I'm also terrified of how many I'm going to have, because, yeah.
Two games tomorrow. Looking forward to it. We call them games or matches? What are we doing?
Matches.
Okay. On the pitch.
On the pitch.
Get ready for that. Patrick Kelly on Twitter. Why not really flummox people? Talking to Nick Whalen here. Irritate Drew and go with Whalen Capper. Okay, I'm done, he says.
I like it.
Doug Tuttle.
I actually love it.
Doug Tuttle took a 40-1 flyer on the A's race to 10 wins. Rideco 99, are you going to a wedding? Old Edward Inn? The Highlands are beautiful. My daughter got engaged up there 2 weeks ago. Enjoy the peace and beauty of the lower Appalachians. I will. Thank you, Rideco. Willie B. Benton. Gil, are you a Spotify guy or an Apple Music guy? I'm curating a playlist for your Tar Heel State trip. I need to know which app to use. I promise not to make it entirely James Taylor, but I do promise to make it awesome. Man, you're the best. I appreciate that. You know about Carolina on my mind, Kelly?
No, I know about it.
James Taylor always says, for all your songs, what's your favorite? He says, I keep coming back to Carolina on my mind. Ray in Texas. Can you ask Dr. Bob, the bear, sophisticated Drew, tennis boy Todd, or that math guy on Fridays, if it's a bad strategy to bet the Spurs on the money line every game the rest of the series, just in hopes to see New York City just crumble after leading 2-0? I want to, he says. Can we just say this also? We haven't brought this up. For the crime of wearing a Spurs jersey walking back out of MSG the other night. You see all that violence?
Oh, God. That was bad.
Listen, you bunch of aimless incels. Get a life. Unbelievable. Shameful. I hope the Knicks lose just because of that.
Fans, man. It gets bad.
When did we become a country of hooligans? When did that happen? Las Vegas 514. I was about to say you're better than that, but no, you're not. Las Vegas 514. Yo. Tell young Kelly that there actually was someone as early as 1876, the founding of the National League, that brought standardized official regulations to statistics. That's to statistics. I'm with him. Who cares about anything before Prohibition? Well, you know, if only we had someone who could rule on this. Paul Sporer joins us now from Austin, Texas. You can follow him on Twitter at Sporer, S-P-O-R-E-R, writes for Fangraphs. Sleeper in the Bus is the name of his podcast. And of course, Paul, also the content designer for Out of the Park Baseball. He joins us now. Paul, what is the date that annoys you? When people go back to baseball stats, what's your go-to date?
Oh, where do I want to stop?
You, in other words, since blank.
I mean, generally, I want to go like integration to like talk about quality of players. I want to go there. But if we're going to go history, I'd like to be like 1901, because that's when you start to get splits. You can see, you know, verse right and verse left. The 1800s stats are a little wonky. I still make players for those. I still make cards for those players in out of the park and everything. And it's still a rich history, but we just don't have as much. So for me, I like to kind of be 1901 or later, just because the data is just way better. Simply put,
Kelly's a prohibition guy. He didn't go past prohibition.
Paul, I'm just wondering who's
honestly,
double checking.
Fine.
Who's double checking stats in 1903? You know.
Well, I mean, they're pretty well regarded through. I mean, they're checked throughout history and reinforced. I think some of the ones we had to kind of go back and get is when they added the Negro Leagues in, and obviously that they don't have as much record keeping, unfortunately. But that's because they were pushed off to the side in the Negro Leagues in the first place. But I wish we had more record keeping there because obviously some of the greatest players ever. But no, I kind of hear you. Post dead ball is when it really kicks in. You know, 1920s. Things definitely get better. But 1901 for me is good because, again, they have splits data. They got pretty detailed data. They're still marked on places on baseball reference where the data is insufficient or maybe not 100% perfect. So I hear you. It's not all tip top. This is everything that perfectly happened in, you know, 100, 125 years ago. But we have a lot of it, and it is well-founded because it's been being collected over the years. And by the way, Gil, on that tweet that you got, you didn't answer them if it's Apple or Spotify for the playlist.
Oh, thank you so much. Apple. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, Paul. Thank you for cleaning that up. That's very nice of
you. No problem.
I'm just amused that Kelly just picks a non-baseball thing like prohibition. Like he could have just
as easily. Yeah, I like that prohibition is his
it's a funny
not
date.
One of the eras of baseball, not like a dead ball era
right.
or the live ball it's or random. Integration or the wild card era, you know, divisional era. Nothing. It's prohibition.
I wanted things like cars and telephones and everything to be around, you know. I thought sure. that made a little bit more
He's
sense.
He's like, I don't know nothing since Brown versus the Board of Education. Like he just randomly picked something.
The crazy thing is like as different as the game is now, I think I mentioned this to you guys before, like you can still find the player types all the way back. Like there were sluggers back then. Mm-hmm. Again, they hit 7 home runs to lead the league, but they were far and away the best sluggers. You know, you can find guys that took a ton of walks, guys that struck out too much. Now, striking out too much back then was like 50 in a year and you need to be strung up in the town square. Now we get that in a month from guys. But even as you go back further and further, the same player types exist in a lot of cases.
You know what gets me through long flights, or at least cuts off an hour and a half of them? Immaculate grid. You must be a great immaculate grid player.
I feel like I'm a pretty good player, yes.
Yeah,
you and will. This job, the OTP job, helps a lot. I'll pull some stuff up that people will say you definitely cheated, and I said, I did not.
He did not.
I did not. I just know this stuff. Now, if you want me to remember an appointment and, you know, text right. you on your birthday, I got none of that for you. But if you want me to know who Claude Ritchie is, an 1800 second baseman,
oh yeah,
I'm your guy.
He's your guy. All right. We just did a segment about current adjusted season win totals that exist in betting markets right now, juxtaposed against the FanGraphs projections at this current moment where these clubs will end up. 29 out of the 30 baseball teams, the Athletics didn't have an adjusted season win total for some reason when I looked at it. And these are the biggest gaps between those two categories. The biggest differences between the adjusted season win total and the FanGraph projections exist with these 7 clubs. At a glance, which is the one that you can get behind the most? Which is the one that you look at and you're like, ooh, I don't know about that?
Which one am I getting behind the most from putting a bet down on the FanDuel total?
On the in other words, which of the FanGraphs projections, in other words, the FanGraphs projections should lead to a bet. Which of the FanGraphs projections are the ones that you're like, yeah, I don't buy into that, or I do buy into it the most?
I mean, I would say the Braves are not, I don't think they're a 100 win team. I know they've played well, they have a bunch of banked wins, but I would definitely agree with the lower adjustment, especially as Philly plays better. They still have their issues on offense, but they're playing better. I know the Mets have not come around. I'm done saying that. You know, we spent the first month saying how the Mets and the Red Sox, you know, those are probably the two biggest disappointments in each league. We keep saying they were going to come around. I'm off that. But Philly, I think, has come around. They're strong. I think Washington is pretty froggy there, 2 games over. And even Marlins give you a game there. So even as the Mets fell off and cleared the path for the Braves, I think those other 3 teams will make sure that – I just don't think they're a 100-win team. I just don't think that pitching through the course of the 6 months is a 100-win team. The offense is electric, and they might add reinforcements. But until they do that, I would look at that 96. That's a good number. Now, it's only, you know, 3.5 wins there. But that'd be enough for me to get down on the Braves.
I agree with you.
As an under.
What about the one that you look at there and you're like, ooh, I don't get that FanGraphs projections as much.
Boy, I don't know. None of these. I mean, I'm not trying to be like,
I'll tell you the one. I'll tell you the one that it was for me. I was surprised. And by the way, the under on the Brewers at 95.5 was juice. So it does sort of lend to the FanGraph number. But I was a little surprised the Brewers were 3.5 wins projected lower on FanGraphs.
I would think that would be the division as well, and the strength of that division, and how at times this year we've had every team over 500 in that division. Right now, the Reds are a couple games under. And so I do think that a routinely bottom feeding division is now a bit of a strength. Like, again, you're getting a game every time. I know the schedule is balanced more these days than it has been in the past. You don't play quite as many in your division, but you still play more. And that is not an easy division to just run through. So I can see how they get there with the Brewers. The one I'm like hemming and hawing on is the Padres too, because I still look at their top level talent and I really want to like it. But then when you dig in, it is hard to get them too far past 500. I think I would still... I don't know. I'm gonna hit the eject button on that one. The more I think about it, I'm sorry, because the Padres, they scare me. They're tough. But as far as your Brewers call there, I see why they get there with the 92, because that division is no joke. And I think there'll be teams adding reinforcements too. I don't think the Cardinals came into the year as a team that you would have thought were going to strengthen themselves at the deadline. I don't think they're going to push all their chips in, but I think they're going to try to improve themselves. The Pirates are fulfilling some promise that they had coming into the year. And of course, the Cubs are supposed to be a lot better than that. They've been ravaged by injury, but they're going to go and get reinforcements too. So I think that less about the Brewers and more about their competition.
Let me ask you about a market now that is adjusted with the absence of Aaron Judge now for a prolonged period of time. Who do you bet here in AL MVP, Paul?
I would try to get cute with it, I think, as I am wont to do. I like it like a Nick Kurtz or even like a Shea Langeliers. Now that Judge has cleared the path, can a catcher win that MVP? No, Kurtz more so. He's just unbelievable. You know, I was a little bit nervous about him in fantasy this year. He was going as a second round pick off of his season last year. I'm like, that's a lot off of 1 year and not even a full year. Maybe I don't want to jump in there. And so I didn't really pick him in the second round. And he got off to a tough start. And I didn't go out tweeting like, this is why I told you not to take him or anything. But in my mind, I did start to think that. I'm not going to lie. I was taking some mental victory laps like, this is what I was nervous about. And he's been electric again. And when they put him in a minor league stadium all the time, as they do both in Sacramento and now this week in Vegas, you see how he can get there. And they're an interesting team, too. If they could rise up. Not that we believe that the playoffs should matter, but some voters do. I think Kurtz is an interesting bet.
Not just cute, an adorable play on Nick Kurtz. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number three of a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network. VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, SiriusXM, Channel 158. The list goes on and on. We appreciate you tuning us in. Gil Alexander, Kelly Midland.
Hello.
Here at Circa Resort Casino in downtown Las Vegas, overlooking the largest sports book on planet Earth. Look at that thing. Look at it. Soak it in. There it is. And there's a stadium swim outside, which is a big old, well, not one big old pool. There's multiple pools.
Seats available today, guys.
Seats available. Yeah. Stadium swim might not be the jam today. It's supposed to be 100 plus today. I think. I think starting tomorrow, I think it gets ridiculous.
There is one guy out there, though. One guy out there that's really into his sheets right now.
In his sheets. He's old school sheets guy. I love that guy.
He's going to have some winners today.
Dallin Cuff will join us later this hour from Turner Sports. Talk World Cup with us. Looking forward to that. And now, ladies and gentlemen, by popular demand, the star of Wish Nev Wednesdays. The star of the Showtime docuseries Action and the star of the Beating the Book Megapod from Pittsburgh, PA. Toddy Wishnev joins us now, courtesy of that progressive guest line. Toddy, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Gilly. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I was interested because, you know, you're usually immersed in your betting all day long, throwing out bets to your Discord channel. And it's rare nowadays, I think you'd probably agree, that something else in sports and sports betting sort of catches your attention and elicits emotion in you. And I was interested to see this yesterday. I had Kelly and I had Sia Najad on yesterday. Sia is an attorney by trade. He also has worked at the Monumental Sports Network. He's a sports bettor, loves to bet golf, loves to bet the NFL, but he's an attorney by trade. So he chimed in on the Brendan Sorsby matter. For those who missed it again, Brendan Sorsby, Texas Tech quarterback, who has admitted to betting on, you know, $90,000 worth of bets, including 40 different wagers on his own Indiana Hoosiers when he was the quarterback for Indiana. And Texas Tech submitted it to the NCAA. Of course, the NCAA ruled him ineligible. And then 2 days ago, just randomly, a local judge there in Texas granted an injunction allowing for Brendan Sorsby to play football after a 2-game suspension this coming football season. And as I was mentioning, and I was sort of quoting Dan Wetzel of ESPN.com, not only was the NCAA right in ruling him ineligible, it was their obligation to do so. He broke the golden rule, and yet the injunction came down, and you had much to say about this.
Well, see, you're 100% right, Gilly. I typically don't really have any interest in the drama of sports. Like, oh, this one signed for $60 million over 5 years and blah, blah. Like, I just don't care. Tell me who's on the teams and let's do the betting. I'm not interested in all the other outside dramas that are, you know, going. I mean, I'm a little bit aware of them, but I don't. Who has time to watch, you know, SportsCenter when I watched already 8 hours of, you know, sports. So the other day yesterday I'm in the sports book and they have Wilbon and Tony on, and I don't really watch them often, but I, you know, I don't mind them. I've watched them before, and they're talking, they're saying how these conferences have a lot of nerve. They're in bed with the gambling companies. Ugh. And this is, you know, they are so hypocritical. And that, I'm like, seriously, folks, is this the level of Abe's ability to reason that is now broadcast on television? This drive, by the way, Sia, is Sia the lawyer who performs his law duties without anyone being able to see his face? No. Is that the Sia Najad?
No, oh, that's, I don't forget.
Okay, my bad.
No.
Anyways, so they're saying this, and they're like, "Oh, the NCAA has a lot of nerve." Blah blah blah. I'm like, guys, it's a great point. Fantastic point. You don't like the gambling on commercials every 4 seconds. I'm all for that. That's great. That's a great point. It has nothing to do with the Brandon Sorsby situation. Not even a tiny thing to do with Brandon Sorsby.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, I understand you don't like that they've taken a big hug, all these sports, you know, to the gambling. Well, obviously they did. They want more money. They want more money. Obviously. Okay. And that's bad. Don't get me wrong. I'm not for that. And you have a great point, Tony. You have a great point, Michael. However, the entire thing breaks down if the players are gambling on the games. Now, maybe America is so dumb at this point and so WWE-ified in everything it does that it wouldn't even care if you ruined the sports. Maybe that's where we're at. If that's where we're at, I'm done. Check out, check, please. I'm sure you're done too, because you're not going to watch made up sports on with the quarterback is betting on the third quarter under. Are you?
The fact that they would miss that point is just so, it's just incredible. And by the way,
but it's not just them. It's not just them. It's all over the place. Willie sent us a thing from Twitter, and people, this is a thing that people think is an intelligent conversation. It's not.
Matt Hayes from USA Today. I alluded to this earlier, but I wanted to flesh it out because I was wondering if someone would do this, and he did. Apparently, so Sorsby at Cincinnati was 0-8 in the month of November the last 2 years. He had, and he just went through a couple games, and he says, let's see. So Sorsby also has 4 fumbles lost over the past 2 Novembers, pushing his total to 11 turnovers in those 8 games. There were 3-1 possession losses. 2 of those losses had similar betting line circumstances. Here's just a couple examples. Arizona was a 5.5-point favorite against Cincinnati in 2025. They lost 30-24. So in other words, they didn't cover. Sorsby had 2 picks, one on the first play of the game of the Cincinnati 25 and another in the second quarter on the Cincinnati 30. The 2 turnovers led to 10 Arizona points. And then another example, Cincinnati, a 5.5-point favorite against West Virginia in 2024, where the over was 54.5. The teams combined for 55 in a 31-24 West Virginia win. Sorsby threw a pick 6, threw a fumble backward pass, returned for a touchdown, and had another fumble that led to a West Virginia field goal. Now, Matt Hayes of USA Today, me, you, no one knows if this is actually a thing or not. But as I was pointing out earlier, because we don't know, is the kind of the point, right? It kind of leads our brains to wonder, interesting.
How many other Brandon Sorsbys are there? Young men get themselves in trouble with the wrong people or just want to buy something for their girlfriend or who knows what the motivation is. And they say now that to themselves, well, I'm a really good player. Why don't I just bet on this game, get my homies to bet or whatever it might be, right? And now fix the game. Oh, what's the worst thing that can happen? Texas Tech judge will say that I have to sit out 2 games. What? This is seriously a thing now? Yeah. I mean, this is so crazy. And by the way, don't you dare think that Brandon Sorsby is the only guy who did it.
Oh, right.
I'm sure there's tons and tons more. And you're just going to kill the entire sport of college football. That's fine. You want to kill the entire sport of college football? You do it on your dime. I don't want to kill the college football. I like it.
Yeah. And again, the fact that they missed the general point of that is just startling. Some people even say Texas Tech knew, oh, yeah, we'll submit it to the NCAA. They'll clearly rule them ineligible, but it'll just end up with a judge here in Texas. And you know how Texas feels about their football, right? So they kind of, that's the Kelly and I, at the end of that segment yesterday, actually had a pretty interesting exchange, which is Kelly was saying, you know, doesn't Texas Tech, I'll paraphrase.
They can't let him on the field. Yeah,
doesn't Texas Tech have any responsibility in this? And I sort of, you know, jokingly, right, the way that I was saying it to Kelly, I was like, well, they should, right? Like, I was saying it that way, but the reality of the situation being, I wouldn't, even though they should, doesn't mean they will, because there's so much.
The Texas Tech boosters are saying, right? People are scared of us, and that's why they don't want to play. Yeah. No, guys. They're not scared of you. This is a Stevie Fezzik argument right here.
Right.
Okay. They are not scared of you, Texas Tech. They are talking about college football being destroyed. What is so hard to understand? Mm-hmm. If the quarterback is betting on the game, it destroys the game. That's it. Enough said. Period. End of story. Texas Tech people should be against it. Everyone should be against it. Otherwise, what's the point here? Why don't we just WWE-ify the entire college football, let Ohio State play Alabama in the title every year, and we'll write up a script, and people will probably love that too because they can drink and get wasted at the game too. Maybe that's what you want. I don't want that. And I would say even in Texas, they probably don't want that if they actually sat down for 10 seconds and thought about it.
It's going to be fascinating to see how it plays out. Really will be. Anything on baseball before we go in our last couple minutes?
I mean, I'm just really upset. I mean, what if I just decided to... What if I started playing tennis against you and Fezzik and started throwing games? All my fans would be like, what the heck is going on here?
All your fans.
This is crazy. Now, granted, even if I was throwing games, it'd be tough to lose to you guys. That would be a difficult thing.
There's also like that part of this, the way you haven't talked about, just continues. It's become so normal now for sports to be decided in courtrooms or Congress or something, and just the idea of like tax dollars need to be spent to figure out what's wrong with our sports situation.
But this is as Dan Wolkin has brilliantly written about it at Sports Illustrated. This is such the obvious no gray area case, right?
Yeah,
you bet on your team while this can't possibly be. Any question to how this goes, and yet here we are.
I just don't know. Like, I keep thinking about our conversation yesterday. Like, it's still Brendan Sorsby, right? He might be good. He's not like Tim Tebow or some amazing college quarterback, though, where a championship's like locked up, right?
They think they're a contender.
Kelly, who cares who he is?
If I'm Texas Tech, I'm not letting this kid on the field. You can't let this kid on the field.
Of course he can.
Like, the school can come up with a million reasons for him not to play. And it's going to ruin their future if they let him play his games.
Imagine that we would think that a academic institution, a academic place of higher learning, would actually do the right thing.
But it's in their best interest.
I would argue that as well. As I said yesterday, they should. But I don't.
This is not even the right thing, Gilly.
Yeah.
You're making it sound like there's an argument for the other side. This is not even the right thing.
I'm not saying there's an argument. This is nuclear. I'm not saying there's an argument for the other side. I'm saying, will they actually do what they're supposed to do? There's no argument.
Right. No, I understand. I'm just trying to say it's even crazy. This is nuclear. You cannot have, you know, it's not like, oh, Texas Tech, do the right thing and suspend a guy who beat up his girlfriend. No, forget that. This is not even a choice. This is the game itself. It's over.
Todd, always remember what Wilbon and Kornheiser said, though. They're in the books or they're in the bed with the sports books. That's apparently their point. To have 100 different bets, so they better start this quick. It's Dallin Cuff from Turner Sports who joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at Dallin Cuff, DalenCuff. True, Dallin, they better start this thing?
Fellas, they need to kick this thing off. I sent them all to your producer thinking I'm not sure they're going to pop them all up here, but here we are. You guys take what you want to talk about. We can dive into some of them. There are, as you can tell, the top is very U.S. focused, and then we broaden out. I think not all of them. There's a lot of them on there. There are a few more. You're right. We got to kick it off. Well, we got to start playing.
Well, let's start with the USA because obviously we're about to enter, you know, this strange period here. All Americans sort of know this from previous World Cups. Like, okay, we're not all soccer fans, but if this goes well, we all suddenly become really big soccer fans and experts. USA to advance to the round of 16 at +110. We have a regular soccer guest, Paul Carr, who comes on here from True Media Networks, and he said, to put it in golf terms, he's like, round of 16 is par for the U.S. You agree with that?
Absolutely. It's kind of table stakes. I will say, describing American soccer fans, you sounded like Knicks fans there for a minute, too.
Oh,
just it just sounded a little bit like what I've heard here in the Tri-State area recently. But I digress. Yes, getting the round of 16 is par for the course here for the U.S., but this is a new World Cup with a round of 32 before that. So we'll have to win a knockout game, which we've already done once in our history, which was back in 2002, beating Mexico. We got a friendly foe, and we beat them and moved on to lose to Germany in the quarterfinals, the deepest we've ever gone. The reason I like this bet, though, I don't like them to win the group. I think Turkey's the best team in their group. I think outside of that, they get through. They'll be in the second place. But even if they do win the group, either one of their first round opponents, I feel pretty good about, particularly if they do win the group, it'll be a third place opponent. So just getting back to par, as you mentioned, I think is a good play. That's why it is basically plus money.
All right. Let's go USA. Let's get it done. Let's get to par. The other one that sort of leaps off the screen for us, I bet Kelly is looking at this too. So Morocco to win Group C at plus 350. That's obviously the group with Brazil. This has, at least an anecdotally on this show, Dallin, this is a very popular bet. Are we a little too, are we risking too cool for school on this with Morocco? Or you feel good about it?
No, it's one of those things where you see it 2 months ago and I'm like, yes, love this. Ooh. And now we're 24 hours out and I'm like, oh, I kind of hate this. Everybody's on it. And at one point it was plus 600. And I'm saying this. Now, you'll look at the where's my ball here? You got me on Brazil here. I love, that's my team number two. I speak the language. I love Brazil. I love the culture. I love the people. Spent a lot of time down there. I always want them to win the World Cup. This team just isn't very good. Like, their midfield is 180 years old. I mean, Casemiro and Fabinho are both in their mid-30s. I can't believe that's still what they're looking at. You've got a Neymar situation where the country's going to revolt if he doesn't play much. And I don't think he should play much. You've got some injury questions. I mean, they're just... they are not what we expect them to be. And Morocco is a team. Obviously, they made the run to the semifinals last World Cup. They are the best team in Africa. I don't care what happened in the AFCON, the Cup of Nations. I'm not even going to give your viewers that debacle that took place. But they're the best team in Africa. And I think they also have now more offensive weapons than we saw in that semifinals group that went to the semifinals. They're tough. They're physical. But they now have more offensive capabilities. I like them to win the group. I think that if they get into that spot, if they do win the group, they could probably play Japan, I think, in that first round, then a Norway situation, potentially Norway or Germany. I think either one of those teams, I mean, Norway's live too, by the way, to beat Germany and get to that stage. I like Morocco's team, but when everybody likes it, as you just said, it's never going to happen, guys, but you know, we're still going down with the ship.
And Dallin, I'll follow up on this one. Cause I was wondering, I haven't made any Morocco bets yet, Gil, but it definitely on my list. One of the ones I was looking at is maybe playing them in like the dual forecast where you can get like Brazil. It's Brazil and Morocco to finish 1-2 in any order. Do you like that? You're laying a price then. You're like minus 160 to lay that.
I was about to say, what's your number there? Yeah. I think for sure those two, they are the class of that group by a large margin. There aren't many groups where the third team is really that compelling. So, I mean, this is a situation where if you're getting them, even at minus 160, you want to lay some lumber on that. I think you should feel great about that materializing. I also do think it just big pictures, guys, with this World Cup now going to 48 teams and having all these third place wild cards, it is much harder, I feel like, to predict who's going to be in the semifinals, who's going to be the quarters. The long-term futures are much harder now. There's just so many permutations and different things that make this thing challenging. In 5 knockout round games, you're going to see some wild stuff. You're going to see maybe 2 penalty shootouts to maybe 3 to get to a final. Like it's going to be challenging, but in some of these groups, I think is where the most value is because they are the known commodities. You know who's they're playing, you know where they're playing, and a lot of these venues are going to be hot, sometimes in the middle of the day, weather will factor. So look at all that stuff.
Again, just cherry picking some of these that you have. This is interesting to me. I'll actually ask both of these in tandem. Argentina out in the quarters specifically. So that's a elimination round out in the quarters at plus 425. Well, let's just take that by itself. What is your thinking there?
I mean, I can't believe Messi's back doing this again. And it's a lot of the same group. I think it's like 17 guys that were on that team that won it in 22 are back yet again. And I think their draw is not ideal. If they win their group, I think Uruguay comes in second in Uruguay's group. That sets up a South American competitors are not exactly scared of Argentina. I mean, these guys don't walk in with the same fear, I think, that other teams have. They play them in the toughest qualifying round, if you will, down in South America. So if you have that. Now, if the U.S. does finish in second, that would be the U.S. game if the U.S. can get to par, like we said. So we would have an Argentina-U.S. round of 16 matchup. But even if that's Turkey, like I said before, I think Turkey is the better team. So I think Argentina then has a tough draw. And then you get Portugal. And Portugal's draw, actually, I believe, is easy. They got a good pocket down there in the bottom right corner. If you're looking at the full bracket, they would play a third place team. And then the other team is the Swiss or a third place team. So I really like Portugal getting to that quarterfinal round. And if you got a more fresh Portuguese team against an Argentinian team, I'll take, I mean, the world was going to melt down with Ronaldo and Messi both, you know, in those lineups if Ronaldo does play, or get in the game, I should say. But Portugal's legit to go the whole way. So I like their path, and I think they can go and go through Argentina. That's why that quarters, that's the rationale for them out in the quarters.
Yeah, I feel like I've been watching Ronaldo play international soccer for Portugal for my entire life, it feels like. I want to get to the golden boot and the golden ball here in a second. Last thing, though. You said it's difficult for the futures. You took a shot at double chance champ Spain or Portugal plus 275.
Yeah. And again, that's both about their path more than anything else. If you look at Spain in that bottom left quadrant again, they have the similar situation where their bottom part of that is going to be a couple third place teams. Now they do have maybe an Austrian team that's tough, Colombia, Croatia. It's not going to be easy, but I like their path overall. I think Lamine Yamal, their group is pretty easy. Lamine Yamal may not play in that first or second game. Hopefully he comes back into health and to form as the tournament grows. They obviously are the reigning European champs. They're stout at all lines of the field. Elite goalkeeping as well. Elite management. I like their setup and their overall grouping they have to get themselves to a final. And I already went through the Portugal piece of this thing. So yeah. If you're going to have both of those and roll the dice with them, I'll take that.
All right. Golden boot, top goal scorer. Golden ball is just what? Best overall player, right? In the World Cup. Okay. Golden boot, speaking of Spain and Portugal, Mikel Oyarzabal at 14-1 for golden boot. We've heard a lot of his name for this.
Oh, Jesus. This is not good news. This is not what I need. This is part of what I do, too. I'll go through all my stuff. I don't listen to a lot of the stuff because I don't want to get polluted, but now here we go. And by the way, I know you're a big tennis guy. Pronunciation nailed it. Phenomenal.
Thank you. Thank you.
The English guys I've worked with in the past, it's Oyarzabal all the time. Just they don't give a crap. They just go plow.
Oyarzabal.
Well, again, Dallin, we've had a couple cracks at it, okay? So don't give us too much credit.
That's true.
Well, don't tell me that. Don't out yourself. You sound great. I think this is more a play of Lamine Yamal possibly being injured. And I do think that with Spain, there's so many guys that can score. I think he will be the recipient. I think he will also be their penalty taker at times. So especially if the mall is hurt, the mall wouldn't always take penalties anyway. So I think there's he's live there to say the least. And I think all these bets, of course, are going to be not off course. You could hedge at different times, but this is my rationale that I think Spain and Portugal, if I'm going to have them in the final, I got to have guys that are going to be playing as many games as possible. So Oyarzabal is there. And then you mentioned golden ball. I like Vitinha. It's a good price at 10-1. One of the best midfielders in the world. Doesn't get talked about a lot. But he controls games. He can pop up and get you a goal. He hooks up guys with assists. And again, that Portuguese theme here. And I think this is the Ronaldo full passing of the torch. He may come on late to try to score goals, but this is not his team. Whereas Argentina, like we said, Argentina is still Messi's team. I think it is a distinct difference between these two greats of the game and how they would be used at this World Cup.
Good news, Dallin. You're the only person who has Vitinha. That we can tell you.
No, I haven't heard that one yet.
Not heard that name. All right. Dallin, appreciate it very much. Thanks for the time. And it will begin tomorrow, we are told. The World Cup. Enjoy.
Thank God, boys. Let's roll this ball out there for the next 5 weeks.
Let's go. Thank you, Dallin. Appreciate it very much. Dallin Cuff, everybody, from Turner Sports at Dallin Cuff, DalenCuff. Love when he gets into soccer.
Oh, I love it too. Yeah. I'm ready to fire this thing up. Let's go.
Let's go.